Hello and welcome to Agents of Nonprofit. My name is Alexander Lapa, and I'm here to speak with everyday superheroes helping nonprofits. Joining me today are two superheroes, Tasha Van Vlack and Dave Norris. Tasha and Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
So the topic of the jour of the day is the Nonprofit Hive, which is an organization, a platform, I'm not quite sure what to call it yet, that you guys have created. But before we get into the details, I was hoping you guys could individually give a brief intro of how is it that you came to be here today? Like, what is your background story, your superhero origin story, all that kind of good stuff?
So I think I'll start this one off. I think my journey to working with nonprofits was, I think, like a lot of people, accidental. I do consider myself nonprofit adjacent, working with nonprofits almost exclusively today. And that has, I think, increased over the years. I started off with a digital marketing agency, and we did some, you know, web design and marketing for some local nonprofits. Cut to, you know, just a few years ago, I was a CTO of a company where we were working exclusively with nonprofits. And I, after leaving there, started building other products and services after the fact just for nonprofits. And then when, you know, I'm sure we'll get to the origin story of the Nonprofit Hive, but when Tasha came to me with this idea, you know, it was kind of like, yes, absolutely. Let's go. Let's build that.
So kind of similar to Dave, you know, my background originally didn't start in a nonprofit, and I'm kind of one of those obnoxious generalists who enjoys marketing and sales and customer success. But, in the last, you know, 7 years have been exclusively working and serving nonprofits, you know, with nonprofits. And during that time, I've just grown a huge passion for the entire industry, for the challenges that are very unique to nonprofit work. And I've just made some really amazing connections and people along the way. I truly believe, you know, surrounding yourself with passionate people brings passion to your life as well. And I don't know where else you can find it to that extent, other than the nonprofit space. So I think it's a pretty exciting space to continue to work and grow in.
And Tasha, you're actually in the exclusive club of reoccurring guests on this podcast, because you were on guest, or you were on show number 33, and there's only been one other person that has appeared more than once.
No way.
So, welcome
well,
back.
I feel very honored for that role. And I guess even then, you know, when we chatted back then about Salesforce and Salesforce training, and a lot of it at that time was even recognizing that, you know, even training in Salesforce for nonprofiteers is different than a lot of other industries. And there's things to consider there that are unique. So, you know, the nonprofit space is pretty special for a lot of reasons.
I agree. So it sounds like the you, Tasha, are the brainchild of this Nonprofit Hive. Yeah. I was wondering then if you could explain, you know, how did you come up with this idea? And, you know, of course, what is the Nonprofit Hive?
Sure. So yeah, absolutely. I've been trying to figure out a way to describe it. And I think I told someone recently, it's my love letter to the nonprofit industry at the moment. And I had, you know, there's kind of two angles that I saw this coming out of. One, I was very fortunate to, during a lunch club meetup a couple of years ago, just shared this story recently, actually, you know, love lunch club, loved meeting random strangers. I love meeting people and hearing their origin stories is one of my favorite things to do, and happened to get matched up with a person who's now my good friend, but I already had kind of met through LinkedIn, Austin Haddix. And it was such a distinctly different lunch club meetup because we both spoke nonprofit, even though we were coming at it from different angles. And that just resonated so cleanly. You know, Austin is, you know, a longtime friend now. And there was that. And then I'd also been invited and been participating for over a year in a sales community called Sales Hookup that was doing something very similar to what we're doing with the Nonprofit Hive, but it was worldwide. It's sales individuals, actually started out of Spain originally. And it, those conversations were so unique every time I joined one of those, because it was salespeople who loved talking about sales and just quirky. It was such a focal point around the conversation of being able to just dive right in on a level that doesn't exist with a stranger where you don't know what your common ground is yet. And, you know, reached out to Dave right after AFP Icon last year and just was going, what about all of us who can't afford to go to a big conference and meet in person? You know, Dave and I are, you know, both working nonprofit adjacent, but I know that resources are even tighter for nonprofiteers that are in-house and have no money. And what happens for them? How do they find community? How do they connect? And we just started researching it and realizing there was nothing quite like it out there for nonprofit folks. So
would you describe the Nonprofit Hive as a community? Is it a one-on-one? Is it networking, forums? What's the mold that you use?
I think that's a good question. I think that we describe ourselves as a community. I mean, to be a little bit punny, we describe ourselves as a hive, right? The Nonprofit Hive. But I think that the idea is that you're actually building true, meaningful connection through one-on-one experiences. So essentially you get to meet with our base platform, 52 people, up to 52 people, new people in a year. And it's through those one-on-one weekly connections that you're having, you know, these really meaningful conversations about what's going on in your life, what's going on in theirs, what's working, what's not, technology, you know, technology aversion, whatever it might be. You're having those conversations. And again, it's that one-on-one connection that I do believe is so powerful that I think a lot of other communities are sort of missing. And then they're missing it by, for instance, like one of the things Tasha and I discussed early on was, well, there's a lot of like from the top down in a lot of communities. And what I mean by that is like there's somebody speaking to a lot of people, and then a lot of people then not feeling as though they really have a voice. And, you know, if they are shy, they don't want to speak in front of, you know, 30, 50, 100, 200 people. So it's that one-on-one that allows them to actually voice their opinion, share, and be heard. And we're finding that that is, I think, you know, it's not about bringing someone out of their shell. It's just about making them feel comfortable with what they're wanting to talk about. And I think that's the communal aspect that we have here with the quote unquote the hive.
So in order to foster a true meaningful connection, there must be some, or is there some kind of filtering process, requirements, approval or application process that people need to go through to make sure you are connecting people who really want to connect, that want to have a genuine relationship, who want to obtain, receive, give something from this connection, as opposed to, you know, anyone that is just expresses some kind of interest.
Yeah, I'll start this one and then definitely pass it to Tasha. But technically speaking, we are capturing, you know, interests and topics and information about the hivers, the people that are signing up for the Nonprofit Hive. And what then happens in the back end is, you know, we've built a system around matchmaking, but Tasha does all of the matchmaking. She's the one looking at all the different values and, you know, those filters that you mentioned, Alex. Like it's definitely, you know, a system there, but it's very much human driven. To get into like the AI speak, there's a human in the loop, right? And Tasha is definitely that human.
I think what's really interesting, and I think you highlighted something that initially, you know, when Dave and I were going back and forth about this idea, we were a little worried that we would get lots of people signing up that weren't actually that interested. But I think when you're talking one-to-one connection, unlike a webinar, group webinar, that you can kind of sit in the back and say nothing and you know, participate, but only kind of participate. This requires, you know, you're going to have to speak. Like if you don't like speaking to other people, this is not the platform for you. That's not what this is not what we've created. There's so many amazing group sessions, communities for nonprofit, particularly in the leadership space. I think there's more of that. What we're offering instead is a space when you want your voice to be heard and you want to communicate and connect with others. So I think it already self-selects out people who are not interested in that. Like they're just not going to join. And then there's obviously a second opt-in in that every Friday we have an invitation to connect goes out. If it works in your schedule and you are interested in connecting that coming Thursday, you opt in by choosing a time. So there's already kind of this natural double opt-in that you do have to take an extra step. You know, I'm not going to send you a match every Thursday and then you get to go, oh, well, maybe it works this week, maybe it doesn't. You're actively deciding to engage for that coming week. So yeah, it very naturally, I think, kind of flows that the people who decide to choose a match for that coming week or choose a time slot, it's because they want to engage.
And so if I'm a member, actually, I like the word hiver. That's a really cool.
Hiver.
If I'm a hiver, then am I being matched to a new person every week or am I meeting the same person week over week?
Brand new. Every week you get a new person, brand new person. And it's been, you know, incredible. We have a couple of people. I think we're coming up on week 15, I want to say, of something like that, 14 or 15. October 19th was our first hive date. So we have some power users who maybe have missed 1 week out of the, and like including the week of Christmas, people showed up. Like it was bananas, wow. Like wonderful. And as we obviously take off, you know, our numbers are growing exponentially recently, and there's just a wealth of potential people for you to meet every week. And so it's me looking at who signs up for which time slot and going, this person and this person, like, this is why I'm going to match these two people together, because they're both super interested in the future of nonprofit work and they both have a fundraising background. Or some weeks I do like opposite week where I'm going, how different can we do a matching while still respecting the fact that they both wanted to talk about the future of nonprofit, but one person is very junior and one's an ED at a major nonprofit in the US. And what can you learn when everybody has a voice? And I think that's been what's really hit home for Dave and I as well, is that, you know, yes, we're facilitating connections, but we're just providing of like this vessel, and then the hivers are doing it. And it's so incredible to watch them take it off and run with it and build a community. And yeah, it's been an incredible experience.
A lifetime ago, I lived in Boston and I was single, alone, didn't have that many connections. And I joined a dating, it wasn't even a website, it was a dating service. And I had to fill out this huge form, everything that I was, everything that I offered, everything that who I was, and everything that I was looking for in a partner. And then this dating service actually had a human, a therapist, that matched myself with potential candidates, potential dates. And there was a certain guarantee, which I really appreciated, because if it was an awful date, they just said, don't worry, it doesn't count. But I've never really seen that kind of human interaction connecting people. Of course, all the apps these days use algorithms, you know, very non-human type stuff. And maybe AI can help with these days better than ever, but there's still something very humane about having a human in the center. And what you're telling me now is, you know, invoking memories of that experience. And I'm curious to know, like, what kind of data points are you asking the hivers before you start matching them? There must be some like criteria to say, okay, well, you know, here's who I am, here's what I'm looking for, here's what I'm hoping to talk about. And therefore, that gives you enough to say, okay, here's a potential match for you based on these common interests or common interests.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, we require LinkedIn. That is a requirement at this point. One, for us to verify you are a real person and that you are, in fact, in the nonprofit space. Two, because we do share, when you are introduced to your match for the week, their LinkedIn URL is part of that. This is still networking. Like at the core, the hope is that you're going to grow your natural nonprofit network. And, you know, we can absolutely see the hivers cheering each other on LinkedIn and engaging. And that's been very rewarding and cool to watch. And then when it comes down to, you know, what are you looking to get out of your nonprofit hive chats is one of the questions. And we allow you to choose four. So what's your top four reasons? So it's, you know, some people are looking to increase knowledge. Some are looking to build out a network and top collaborations, discussing your mission, future of nonprofit work. So you're going to choose your four. And then I'm looking additionally at what your nonprofit role is, potentially what your organization is, and kind of taking notes. Are there two people who are both in animal advocacy groups? They're probably going to have a really unique and interesting conversation with each other. Seniority level, number of years in your role. So all of those kind of play together to come into why I decide who you're matched with.
And do you normally recommend a particular topic when you're matching the two people together, or is they can decide on the spot as they meet what is interesting?
Yeah, right now, Alex, they can decide on the spot. And I think that one of the things that we've talked about are some more topic related, like centralized topic, let's say, or topic focused Hive chats. We internally labeled those swarms. But I think we're putting those off. I think one of our main focuses right now is really nailing and dialing in on, you know, this free, which I don't know if anyone has mentioned that yet. By the way, this is all free. Free for nonprofit pros, free for nonprofit consultants, free for nonprofit adjacent, free for people who are just thinking nonprofit. But it's those people that I think, you know, giving them the platform, like Tasha said, giving them the vessel to just jump in and, you know, formally meet and greet, but then really discuss, you know, things that are on the table. One of the most frequently asked for features and something that we're working on currently are like in the Hive chat, like an actual prompt. And it's those prompts that, you know, like maybe three prompts that are using generative AI to like take this person's, say, interests and this person's interests and say, well, you both have these interests. You could talk about this, or start the conversation by talking about animal advocacy, right? Like, and I think that's the power of this platform is the openness and allowing them to kind of guide that conversation. But there are some things cooking, I think, to where we could have centralized topics where, you know, the general hive mind is kind of working on or discussing again a central topic. But I think one thing maybe to go back on, if you don't mind, Alex, like I just want to kind of state how simple this is. And in doing so, you know, it's really, the sign up process is easy. There's no login, there's no password. You're giving us your name, your email, yes, but you're also giving us some topics, and you get to pick, you pick four out of like eight topics. And then every Friday you get sent an email, Sunday you get sent a reminder email, Thursday you have your Hive chat. You pick from three times. There's 8:30 a.m. EST, there's 12:30 EST, and there's 4:30 EST. So it really is that simple that we're trying not to, you know, bog anyone down with a bunch of selections or, you know, rigmarole that might get in the way. We're really trying to, again, just take one person and introduce them to 52, potentially, again, throughout the year, meaningful connections.
Are there any topics that you would consider taboo, or is there anything that the members have to agree to, a code of ethics, regulations, rules, just so that maybe there are certain things you don't want to discuss or prefer if they don't discuss? Or is it just really, I mean, because I love the idea of the prompt in case they can't come up with a subject, but I'm worried more, or I'm not worried about, but I'm asking about, you know, just if there's, you know, some kind of moderation basically of these kinds of conversations.
I mean, at this point, we haven't dove too far into moderating what people talk about. I mean, I think I'm spending quite a bit of time even, you know, just learning who some of our hivers are. Over time, the more people use it, the easier it is for me to match them, to be honest, right? So like the one-offs are the challenge sometimes, where I have to go in, look at their LinkedIn, understand a little bit, you know, sometimes about what they're interested in or past work, things like that. But I, you know, we do have a Hive etiquette piece. It's a video that's shared every week. You know, there's a link to it in, you know, here's your Hive match, here's your introduction. Please, gentle reminder about our Hive etiquette. But our Hive etiquette at this point really is, A, we respect each other's time here at the nonprofit Hive. You know, nothing irritates me more in my personal life and in my Hive life as ghosting. It's just not necessary, because if you're not interested, that's totally fine. Don't join, like, or don't ask to participate. It does happen. Emergencies happen. You know, that's something Dave and I are still working on from a user perspective, because people are really bummed when the Hive chats don't happen sometimes, right? Like something comes up, someone misses, things like that. So we've been slowly building out user experience flow. And then the other big one on our end is, this is a non-solicitation environment. So for our nonprofit adjacent folks, whether they be tech providers, marketing specialists, fundraising specialists, all across the gamut, please come, bring your best self. Don't give away, like, we're not asking you to give away all of your proprietary knowledge or any of that. But I do think there's a unique experience that consultants bring to the table. They often have institutional knowledge and resources and the time to continue learning that nonprofit people in-house don't have. And some of our best rave review Hive chats have been from people who got matched with a consultant and are like, this blew my mind. They sent me a free resource and it's a game changer. And like, we get those messages from people. And I think there's a great opportunity for consultants to also get out there, build an organic network, and also prove themselves to be the people other people want to work with. And I think it's a warm conversation with someone in your industry. Sometimes it's consultants being matched with consultants. That's proven to be really helpful. We know that people have gotten work out of the Hive, but that's not what we're asking you to bring to the table. We're asking you to just bring yourself to the table. And what flows out from there is kind of all on you after that. So
you mentioned feedback. So is there some kind of feedback where the participants of the meeting can share their thoughts about the meeting or any kind of review process or, you know, star ratings or anything of that effect that you either have planned or are currently using?
Yeah, so that's a good one there, Alex. And maybe a little bit of, I hate to even say this, but like self-promotion, but we do use ProofPact to collect feedback immediately after Hive chats are over. Hivers are redirected to ProofPact to share their experience, share their story about, you know, what they just talked about, how things went. And we get both positive and negative, you know, responses there to where, you know, if someone did have technical issues or if someone didn't show, or, you know, we get all of that information right then and there immediately after the call. So it's all still fresh in their mind. We do also follow up with more of like a formal survey, like a half hour afterwards, automated email that goes out then that says, you know, ask them how it went, and does have some more pointed questions. But immediately after their Hive chat, we do give them sort of an open form to share either video or text of how their call went.
It's absolutely helping us so much in terms of not only, you know, ProofPact has a storytelling component of what we can grab. So like grab stories afterwards of user experiences. People are often very happy to share quite detailed, sometimes stories of how things went and what it meant to them, which is amazing. And then in terms of, you know, any negative reviews we've had so far, almost like we have a 90% positive review rating right now, which is great. Super happy about that. The negative experiences are almost exclusively things that Dave and I are working on, which is technical things and the ghosting and, you know, figuring out our processes, which sometimes it's as simple as going, we have an add to calendar button. What a game changer, because that helps on people's scheduling. Sometimes it's, you know, oh, do we need to move our reminder email to the night before because people need more than an hour's reminder notice. So some of this is just all the bumps and, you know, fun of having an MVP that we're figuring it out as we go along, but this is a very community-led project. Dave and I are working really hard to not have our assumptions of what is needed lead where the product is going. We are very much relying on our Hivers to give us feedback and build something better that they all want to use.
Yeah, this is very much community-driven, and it will be, you know, from now until the end. I think that the idea that, you know, we are listening to what they want, you know, features, problems, whatever it might be. I guess just to paint the picture there, you know, out of all the Hive chats that we did just yesterday, we do them again on Thursdays, I think only two came back negative. And one was because they got ghosted, and one was because they had technical issues. And typically the technical issues are like camera, couldn't select the camera, or microphone wasn't working. And it's those cases where it's like, well, you know, a good old fashioned restart might help, but we're working. Tasha and I are taking it very seriously. I joke, but we're taking it very seriously because ultimately it does lead to, you know, either a successful, you know, feeling post their Hive chat, or, you know, sort of a negative feeling post their Hive chat too. So it's one of those things that we are working on some troubleshooting documents as well, just to make sure that we can cover the bases there.
It definitely sounds like you guys are using a lot of data to make the to make decisions, which is wonderful to hear. Not enough organizations do that. And even if the data is, you know, obviously written by a person, you're still using it. So it's great to collect all this kind of feedback, these surveys, to know what to do next. Yeah. I was curious if we could dive a bit deeper into the layers of the business, because you mentioned, Dave, that it's free. So how is it supported? Is there a, what is the business model? Is there ads? Is there subscriptions that some people can pay for, certain promotions that certain agencies or nonprofits can apply for? How do you generate revenue?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so the, I mean, I think like any startup, like any small business, Tasha and I have run through all of the different scenarios and possibilities and what ifs and, you know, revenue streams and revenue models. And we're taking this very organically. So Tasha and I both, you know, are doing other things. And what we're finding is we're feeling ourselves being pulled in more and more to the hive because it's really demanding it. But one of the things that we started off with right now are some very early sponsorships. And those sponsorships are, you know, visual placement within our emails, visual placement within the Hive chats themselves. And we're currently growing that, offering a little bit more, doing some more inside of, like, let's say the Hive chats themselves, visually speaking for our sponsors. And, you know, we have some other things in mind as well. And I'll mention private hives. In that the private hives are essentially, take for instance, a nonprofit that is a national nonprofit that has offices in, let's say, Washington, D.C. and San Francisco, and they want, you know, their team members to meet, they can do that and they can be involved in the matchmaking process and they can help, you know, people meet each other that would have likely never, ever met before. People who are working on the same thing, doing the same thing, maybe even have the same job title that are in it together, and they can, you know, find that community, find that camaraderie, and it really helps to blend cultures, I think, at that point. But those are the two main areas, I think, right now that Tasha and I are not only exploring, but we've activated already the sponsorships, and it's our goal that by the end of Q1 we have private hives ready to go. Which, by the way, we've already done one private hive for a nonprofit out of Canada. So,
and then, because two of us are quite techie, I'm curious to know, you know, the kind of technology that you're using to run the platform. Because you mentioned earlier, you know, problems with the camera, problems with the mic. So
yeah,
obviously there's some kind of, you know, Zoom-like feature to it. So how do you, I'm curious to know, you know, whatever you'd like to share, but I'm really curious to know how you work. The certain different types of technology and tools, apps, CRMs you guys use.
Yeah, so, and well... We're actually getting ready to switch CRMs, so I won't mention names there. But technology-wise, again, this is something we've tried to really keep simple, you know, like following the KISS method, right? Keep it simple, stupid, or keep it stupid, simple, whatever. And I think that the idea is, which, by the way, nuance there, those two acronyms said differently do mean different things. But so I think that, you know, as far as technology is concerned, keeping it simple, it is using WebRTC. And we did not roll our own. I have built that out in the past. And in this particular case, we are using a platform called daily.co, which we then interface with via their API. We do host the calls on our website, but they are essentially iframed in. And it's that platform that we're using to then, you know, send a request to get the response back, which is the URL for the chat, parameters that we're sending, you know, all done over, you know, API calls. So relatively simple platform, lightweight. You know, we're not actually hosting those calls, so, you know, the bandwidth's not necessarily on us either there. But I think that if there are any problems with a chat, it's usually because of low bandwidth on the user side. So, like, you know, connection is just 15 megabits per second or something like that. Getting a bit nerdy with it, but, you know, Tasha and I do look at packet loss and do inspect everything in those calls. I mean, Tasha's in there, you know, like throughout every Thursday, she's like, hey, just saw that, you know, there was like 40% packet loss on this one Hive chat. And we're like, all right, well, we're going to have to probably, you know, reach out to those folks. So it's one of those things, again, we're very cognizant about, you know, because what we don't want are people, you know, having a bad experience and then, you know, jumping off and then going into Zoom or something. It's just, it's especially once we get more of the features in chat, it's going to be, you know, doable. And I think in a rare case, it should happen, because if they truly can't use this service, going elsewhere, you know, Zoom tends to compress video, compress audio, those types of things do matter as far as quality is concerned too. So we're cognizant across the board, but those are, I think, you know, as far as a tech stack, that's kind of what we're up to there.
And after the meeting, am I able to get either a recording of the meeting or a transcript or a summary of it, just in case, for example, or am I responsible for writing my own notes in case information is shared that I want to capture?
Tasha and I are surveying the landscape on that one, because we have other ideas that would require us to, for instance, do a call recording. Like I mentioned earlier, the topic-related, topic-focused hive chats, the swarms, those would require us to have a recording of the call, transcript of the call, and then using some generative AI to, for instance, summarize, you know, create topics, sentiment analysis, things of that nature. And what we've found is that people right now are kind of on the fence about, you know, their calls being recorded. So we're respectful of that. We don't currently record any of the calls. It's not even an option. But if it does become something in the future that maybe people want to turn on or off, that I think would be a potentiality. But right now, no.
So we've touched the topic of AI a couple of times, and I know, Dave, you're a big AI advocate. So I'm curious to know, are you looking for opportunities to use AI with the nonprofit Hive, or is it just you see a problem and you know right away this is meant for AI to solve?
That's an interesting one. And I want to, you know, definitely transfer this to Tasha, because I appreciate her outlook on generative AI as well. I'll give a short answer and say that we have things in mind for utilizing generative AI. One of the things that I'm finding in my own consultancy with, you know, building out generative AI powered applications, let's say, or tools or automations, in a lot of cases, it's not necessarily an AI application that is needed. It is just an application that is needed, a framework, if you will, where I think generative AI has kind of helped people think, oh, this is approachable now. We can do this now. It's easier now. You know, we have coders who are using like generative AI with things like GitHub Copilot, and like everything's quote unquote easier. So I think the train of thought is good. It's a little bit of a shift in people thinking maybe more pragmatically about how to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. And so anyways, long way of saying that I think that generative AI is great. Obviously, I'm building with it a lot, but there are some people who have come through and turns out they don't actually need a Gen AI powered application.
Because you said easier using AI. I mean, obviously that's the case, but I would also add to that, I think it's becoming more accepted socially to use AI, that people are getting used to the concept that there could be AI around, or there could be AI involved in doing and using, how do I put it, that AI might be in use, whatever you're doing these days. It's more, I believe, at least a little more socially accepted, and there's a bit more of an understanding, which I think also helps promote the whole concept of use of it, and it's kind of a feedback loop.
That's definitely true. And the rise of the large language model, I think, has exacerbated that idea. I do feel, though, as though people are more accepting of it, more interested in it, you know, versus short story is that, you know, in like 2017 or 2018, I built my first, you know, quote unquote AI. We're using TensorFlow, scraping data from Reddit, and it was relatively awful in terms of how it was actually doing its thing. I mean, very, very small data set in comparison to what we have now with billions of parameters and so on and so forth. But now that these large language models are available, and you have companies like, you know, Anthropic and OpenAI and Microsoft and, you know, Meta with Llama and various open source models and all the Hugging Face models and you know, various checkpoints. I do believe that it's become more mainstream and people are looking at that and saying, oh, well, this is something that we can do too. And it's not this necessarily like this dark and ominous AI that's behind the scenes that nobody really knows how it works, or people that don't understand neural networks don't know, you know, the weights and balances that are within said model that they're thinking about even using, or maybe not even thinking about the model, just thinking about the what ifs. So I think a lot of that has been curbed with recent advancements.
Tashin?
I was going to say, I feel totally out of my depth here and will fully admit to being like the most obnoxious people persons that it's always about the humans for me and will forevermore be. And technology is, this is why my brilliance is truly pairing with someone like Dave, who can speak to parts of what we need to grow this platform successfully and this community successfully. But I always like to look at it as like, well, what do the humans need? And that's relationships and connections and community. And that's never been more true. It's kind of interesting, right? To watch technology take off on one hand and people feeling so desperately needy for community and connection at the same time. And it's almost like they're both going like this and in opposite directions. And we need to find those intersections where AI can help the humans, I guess. And I mean, I listen deeply to people like Mina Das and what she has to say, and her, you know, newsletters come out and half of it goes over my head because I'm not totally sure what she's saying. Sometimes I have to message her and go, what does this mean? But I also appreciate that she's trying to keep humans at the center of it. And she's trying to, you know, talk about, yes, we need quantitative data, but what about qualitative, right? What does qualitative mean? Because those are the real people. Those are the real users in that qualitative data as well. And so I, as a marketer, there's some super cool AI options out there. I am super impressed with what's coming out and where I can, you know, make my work more efficient or flow more smoothly, or, you know, be more creative too, right? Like I feel there are certain places I feel my creativity has been encouraged because of AI, but I'm always kind of looking back at it and going, okay, yeah, this was a great tool. Now, how do I bring my humanity and who I am as a person to it to make it more powerful in the end, I guess?
Yeah, the topic of the direction of AI and disconnecting humans is one we could talk about for another session because that can go on for quite a while. But there's definitely some kind of trend for sure. I mean, I think it's a factor of remote work, missing that in-person communication. That, but let's not try to solve that problem today. I'm curious. But it's you're, and I think you're totally right. Also, having the partner, you know, with the more techie and the more human partner, I think is a great combination because then you get the best of both worlds. So it's great that you guys found each other. I'm curious to know then, what are and what can you share with our listeners for future plans for the nonprofit Hive, at least in the short term future? I know you mentioned a couple of them already, but if there's anything that you could just, you know, thoughts where you're kind of going with this in the near future, if you could share that, that would be great.
Yeah, so I think the two things mentioned, again, there's some small changes, I think, bubbling up, and not necessarily changes, but enhancements, let's say, like prompts being added to chats, like sponsorships, like private hives. And I think, again, private hives, to pause on that for a second, is going to be something that, again, will help create connections where connections were not going to be made previously. And it is just, again, a sort of a closed door, only your core group or only those who you want to let in are going to be able to use it, and more control over the matchmaking side of things too. And so I think that one's going to be our focus for Q1, Q2. Again, sponsorships is great because that's helping us keep doing what we're doing. It's also lifting up those who are in our community who are, you know, actively participating, you know, which by the way, we are trying to keep it in-house in that people are members of the Hive. They are sponsoring, you know, not just like random sponsors coming through and being like, well, we want to, you know, toss our toss our name out there. But I think that's foreseeable future. For like long term, I mean, Tasha and I just want to grow this. We want to take this to always be taking it to the next level, but always be taking it to that level that is expected by the community, not trying to like go and build the next, you know, SaaS product where Tasha and Dave make some exit in 5 years. This is one of those things, like Tasha said earlier, like at its core, it is networking. And, you know, I will be the first to say that Tasha and I both use the nonprofit Hive. We are actively, you know, speaking with people. We are, you know, engaging with people. A lot of our Hive chats, I know, you know, Tasha and I have talked about this, do tend to relate to the nonprofit Hive. So it's almost like self-serving the nonprofit Hive in that, like, we're gathering input, we're gathering like in-person feedback. You know, like I always ask a question, like, what are some features that you would like to see, you know, us build into the nonprofit Hive? Or, you know, are there issues you've had? You know, what could we be doing better? Things like that. To where, again, it really is community driven. And I my hopes are, and Tasha and I have alignment here, that it is community driven now until the end of time.
Yeah, I second absolutely everything that Dave is saying here. And yes, there's the future state from a technology standpoint of where we're headed with the Hive. And I'm super excited for those pieces. Obviously, you know, there's some level of excitement on mine and Dave's end to go, well, how do we make this sustainable as a practice while still offering free Hive chats? And that's something we're working on, right? We're still early days. We're aware of that, but that has to be a goal for this to continue to be a sustained community. We have to figure that out, and that's our responsibility. I think, you know, on a, you know, pie in the sky optimist in me, you know, I look at the nonprofit Hive and look at this as a contribution of what I can bring back to the social impact community. That is just, like I said, I called it a love letter earlier, and I think that truly is partly what it is. I'm not positive. I've joked around about having horrendous boundaries when it comes to personal relationships, and in more that I just have a lot to give and I want to give more. And Dave's constantly cautioning me on this. But at the same time, here's something that we could bring back to this industry that is desperately needed. Community and connection is desperately needed. We could provide it for free. And we're actually in 22 countries at this point, actually 23 as of today, because I saw someone signed up from Zambia. It's wild. And this is 100% organically community driven. We are not paying for ads. We are not out there doing anything beyond LinkedIn. And I mean, we have an Instagram channel that this is not widely used and things like that, but this is, people are talking about it. People want to connect. This is, and social impact is much bigger than just North America. And so we're excited to see what happens and what comes out of big discussions about nonprofit work, about marketing, about fundraising, and like, what could we achieve if we stop siloing each other into or nonprofit organizations and looked at it as like a sector level thought experiment, right? Like thought experiment by the people who are actually in the work, doing the work every day. So.
Yeah. And two, I'll just add one more thing that Tasha and I are like, you know, finding ourselves just wading deeper and deeper and deeper into the nonprofit Hive. And we've actually just had recent discussions about this, like stemming from Q4, like, you know, now in Q1, like just that short period of time. I mean, we've had so much interest, so many new signups. You know, we are finding ourselves like kind of like steering in the direction of the nonprofit Hive. Cause again, this was not our full-time gig, you know, in Q4 and technically still isn't, but, you know, we're starting to like think through like, what does that look like? Because we're just, there's so much traction here. There's so much momentum. People are, like I said, people are joining left and right. And like Tasha said, it's organic. You know, just tossing that one out there.
The gravitational pull is very strong. It means you're onto something.
Yeah, it definitely feels like holding lightning in a bottle a little bit sometimes, right? And Dave and I were smiling, and I'm sending screenshots and, you know, to Dave, because a call ended at 1 o'clock PM yesterday. And at 1:03, I had this lovely message on LinkedIn from someone being like, what a game changer. First chat. This was incredible. And then at 1:06, I got an email because, you know, because the conversations are coming from 10 different locations all the time. I got an email from someone going, how did you find this person? And how did I not know them? So it's also such a great feedback loop for Dave and I. Yes, there are the moments where we can't solve a problem for someone and that's a bummer, but overall the feedback is so wildly positive that it's almost like, well, how could we not steer ourselves in this direction? Because it's clear that something is happening here and we're just going to kind of hold on for dear life, I think, and see where the community
leads. That's what it feels like.
It does feel like that for sure.
Well, listen, I want to thank you for building this and for seeing the need and responding to the need. And I was hoping you could share the link so people can sign up. Whoever is listening, you know, if they are curious to learn more, where can they go?
Absolutely. You can find us on LinkedIn, very active on LinkedIn. Both Dave and I, please reach out and connect. We're happy to chat. And the nonprofithive.com is our website. That's where you can go and sign up and learn a little bit more what's happening. Definitely go check out our testimonials. We got some people who are super keen and they like to share. So find us there. And I guess like my only final thing would to say is like, you know, take a chance. Worst case scenario, you come on one call and you're like, yeah, this isn't for me. There's nothing to lose either. And a whole lot, I think, to gain by participating.
Tasha, Dave, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate you having us.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, that's it for today. I'm Alexander Lapa, and I hope you join me again in the next Agents of Nonprofit.